Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview edition, here with Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
You've got on your phone voice.
My phone voice. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Didn't you have a, is that dogs at your house or my house?
That's me. Yeah. I'm right in front of a window. And so you might hear some random atmosphere noise.
Hey, dude, in quarantine on these Movie Crushes, we're all about atmosphere.
Well, you might get what you're looking for then.
Ruby's been popping in for most of these shows, but she actually spent the night at my mom's last night. So she will not be popping in right now, sadly.
Ah. Dang. Oh, well.
But she says, hi. She says, go Superman. Screw you, Batman.
She's team Superman, huh?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about, well, first of all, we should just say that, you know, you and I had been doing the Sofia Coppola series, and you said, hey, you want to mix it up since we're quarantined and do something just a little more, fun? Was this movie fun?
No. Yeah, maybe this was a bad choice in retrospect, but it's something different.
Yeah, something different, which is good, because I think people have been enjoying the during this lockdown period, these episodes that are a little, I even got Casey to lighten it up.
What did he do? High Fidelity?
He did High Fidelity.
Nice. Was that a good one?
Yeah, it was. It was good. Yeah, I quite enjoyed that movie. So it was fun talking to Casey about it.
By the way, I really like your new look with the sans beard.
Yeah. It's already coming back, as you can tell.
Are they going to have to change the illustration art to remove your beard on the cover art?
No, I did think about that. I was like, do I have to change my Bitmoji?
Oh, boy.
But it's coming back. Ruby was not a fan, and she has since gotten used to it, but she's like, grow the beard back, Daddy.
What Ruby wants, Ruby gets.
That's right. You got a little beard going.
Yeah, I've always got kind of a little 5 o'clock shadow beard, but letting my regular hair grow out, though, just because I haven't been to a barber in a while, so.
Yeah, so I get decidedly younger and rounder when the beard is gone.
I showed that picture of you on Facebook to Alice, my girlfriend, and she said you look like Nathan Lane, so.
I got some of Nathan Lane. I got some lead singer of The Descendants. I got... who else? There were about five or six different people that I got, and and Nathan Lane it's fine.
He's a treasure. He's a national treasure. Come on.
No, I don't care. I clearly don't care what I look like, Paul. So, you suggested a list of movies, and one of them was Down with Love. And I said, you know what? I've never seen that. And I've heard it's good. Let's do that. And you bullied me into fucking Batman versus Superman : Dawn of Justice : Ultimate Edition, which we had to push this recording because I was going to watch it last night. And then I was like, you know what? I'll just get up in the morning and watch it and then record right after. I did not realize it was a 3-hour movie. So we had to kind of push this by probably 45 minutes.
I want to thank you, Chuck, for indulging me in this film. I have a lot to say on it.
Good.
I've got almost 3 pages of notes that I typed up since last night.
No, that's fantastic. I'm glad.
So I'm excited to dig in, and I appreciate you being willing to play ball here with me.
No, of course, man. And, you know, I'll go ahead and level set right out of the gate and say that I saw the regular theatrical version in the theaters. I remember not really loving it at the time. I will say the Ultimate Edition feels like a fuller experience, and I think that 30 minutes helped, which is not always the case. And I liked the movie now.
Really?
Don't love it, but I did like it.
Good.
It was a bit of a slog.
Yeah.
At 3 hours, but I wasn't ever bored. There's just a lot to unpack in this movie, so start unpacking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess I should start where I'm coming from with this movie. I've actually never seen the theatrical cut.
Wow.
I only came to this movie having seen the Ultimate Edition. I didn't see it in theaters. I actually wasn't really interested in kind of the DC movies at that time.
Okay.
And so I guess just to level set where I'm coming from, when, you know, you talk about the Marvel versus DC battle, I wouldn't say I really have a dog in that fight. I see most of the Marvel movies. I didn't see many of the DC movies until seeing this one, and then kind of going back and seeing some of the other ones like Man of Steel and Wonder Woman, which I liked a lot.
Loved it.
And so that's kind of where I'm coming from. And especially because with these DC movies, especially, there's a lot of toxic, there can be a lot of toxic fandom out there.
Okay.
That, you know, when Batman v Superman came out or Justice League, these movies were not well received by the critics, especially compared to Marvel. And
yes,
so there's a lot of people saying that, you know, oh, people are just biased against DC, blah, 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 blah. I don't really care much about all that. I think Batman v Superman is a legitimately great film. It might actually be one of my favorite superhero films, full stop.
Oh, okay. All right. That is a level setting. And I will also say that while I did enjoy the movie today, I just crushed out The Winter Soldier with Annie. And seeing these two movies sort of back to back, this one suffers a little bit because I just feel like Winter, and, you know, different films, obviously, but Winter Soldier was such a sort of a richer experience character-wise and so grounded in reality and had, I think, some amazing grounded in reality chase and fight sequences. And so it was hard to get that out of my head because this movie is not that, and it's not trying to be, so it's not fair really to judge it against that. This movie is not grounded in reality at all and is very, very over the top in the action sequences, although I did follow it better than other Zack Snyder action sequences in other films. Just literally following the action.
Yeah. I haven't listened to the Annie episode yet, but I'm sure it was great. She obviously knows her stuff and she's a big Winter Soldier fan in particular. So I'm excited to listen to that one.
That's a good one.
So that's interesting. So I will say that when it comes to the Marvel films, like I said, I see most of them. My general take on most of the Marvel films is they all kind of are decent. And there are a handful of them that I think, for me, rise above. That handful might be Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Captain America, and maybe Black Panther. For me, the rest of them kind of sit in this decent but not great category where I kind of get fatigued because so many of them feel like they are movies made by committee.
Yeah.
And I will say, whether you love or hate Batman v Superman, it's one of the rare cases where I feel like the director was given free rein mostly to make the movie they wanted to make.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
For better, for worse.
Yeah. I mean, all right. Well, there's a couple of questions I have for you. Mm-hmm. And you can answer them in either order. Are you familiar with the Batman versus Superman storyline in the comics? And what are your general Zack Snyder thoughts, period?
No, not really familiar with the comics. The storyline in the comics. Are you?
No.
Okay. So we're both coming at it from a similar angle. Zack Snyder, I have a few holes in his filmography that I haven't seen. So I haven't seen all of his work. I think he can be really great. He can be really bad. I think he sometimes gets an unfair shake, perhaps, because he kind of gets seen as this guy making these big, dumb movies that are like all about strong, masculine men and that saying how that's awesome, like 300 and stuff, where I think what's actually in the films is a bit more nuanced than that.
And this one?
And this one, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the third question, sorry, I forgot, was just general thoughts on Ben Affleck as Batman, which was a bit of a controversy at first and sits well with some people, doesn't sit as well with others.
In my notes, I wrote, he might be my favorite Batman ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear about it.
I think he just really commits to the role. And I think he does a great job as Bruce Wayne, especially. He's a little bit older. He's got the hair is kind of graying, and he's a guy that's seen some shit. So maybe to jump into the movie, we can talk about this depiction of Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you've got the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Right.
And one of the readings of those films as a whole, you know, they came out in the early 2000s, is that they're all kind of reactions to, we're going to get a little political here, reactions to the Bush years, the President right. Bush years. Post 9/11, here you've got this anti-hero vigilante who has to bend the rules in order to keep people safe.
Yes.
And some people could read that as, that's maybe how President Bush saw himself in the War on Terror. And for example, in The Dark Knight, you have the climax, literally Batman using illegal cell phone surveillance technology to locate the Joker.
Yes.
And it's kind of messed up. It's like, you know, violation of civil rights, you know, going into the Real Life Patriot Act, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So all that's to say, here we have a Batman that's hateful, mm-hmm. that's vengeful, that's mean, that's angry.
The darkest Batman yet, I think.
Yes, absolutely. He's alcoholic. He takes pills. He's racked with childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And again, he circumvents the rule of law, except this time he goes really far.
Yeah.
He kills people. He literally brands them.
Yeah, that's a big deal in this movie, that he's gone to the dark side.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting take, because you see a Batman, you see kind of how messed up this idea of Batman can be, this billionaire who has unlimited resources, who can kind of work above, outside the law and do whatever he wants. And in the movie, you know, you see them say how he becomes judge, jury, and executioner for these criminals.
Yeah. And, you know, the movie opens with sort of one of the, and I don't know if this was on purpose or just sort of the natural order of how things go with this storyline, but it opens with the battle. Was it called the Battle of New York, or not New York? I guess it would be the Battle of
Metropolis
with Superman v. Zod, and very much addresses some of the criticism from the fans, which was they have fucking destroyed Metropolis and killed untold thousands of people, ostensibly, that you never really see that, because of this battle with Zod. And there was a lot of blowback from fans about that in that movie. And that's sort of the central driving force in this film for Batman and what he wants to do, because he's the guy that wakes up, sees Metropolis wrecked, sees his business and his building cut in half, and that little girl, you know, that scene at the beginning is really powerful, and he's the first one that's like, Superman is bad guy.
Yeah.
Not good guy.
Yeah, I think that opening where we see the events from a different perspective is really great, because first you got to give Snyder a lot of credit for addressing one of these big fair criticisms of Man of Steel, which was sort of indiscriminate killing of untold thousands just so these guys could have their climactic battle on a playground that's Earth, you know?
Yeah, their big dick contest.
Yes, absolutely. And so you see it from the ground perspective, and I think it evokes, to me, it evokes imagery of 9/11 very...
Yeah.
Consciously, you know, especially when the building crashes down and the smoke rushes towards Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
That's 9/11 imagery right there. And so I love how he uses a criticism from the last movie to makes it kind of the central conflict of the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, Batman is sort of the first one to get that seed planted in his head. Because, like I said, very personally, his business and industry was affected. But the whole world starts to get on board in this movie. And that is sort of the central conflict, which is Superman picks and chooses who he saves and who dies in a certain way. And all it takes is for this alien to change his mind. And then we, you know, the whole God, man, false God concept is, and savior thing. Like there's a lot of really heavy themes in here about Superman that if you were just a casual Superman fan and didn't read the comics and stuff, it's sort of pretty heavy stuff, you know? Sorry, Siri, just talk to me for a second.
All good.
But, you know, it's like it's some pretty weighty stuff here with the savior, the Messiah, the God complex.
Yeah, I agree. I think I have a quote here that's from Deborah Snyder, who's Zack Snyder's wife, but also, I think, a producer and produced this movie. And she was talking about sort of the negative reaction to Batman v Superman. And she said, people don't like to see their heroes deconstructed.
Yeah.
And I think this movie very much does that with these two characters where it...
Yeah, both of them.
It questions the sort of the very foundations of what they're built on.
Yeah.
And that's why the movie's so interesting for me, because it dares to do that. And even if it isn't entirely successful, it still dares to give you something different, you know?
Yeah, and it's not... it kind of occurred to me like somewhere an hour or two that there's really not a protagonist in a lot of ways. It's hard to figure out who the good guy is. And I think maybe that had something to do with the critical reception is people that makes people uncomfortable when there aren't very clear sort of guidelines as to who you should be rooting for.
Yeah. And you know, you can maybe choose to identify with Batman or Superman, but when they start doing things that you don't like, when Batman starts branding people,
yeah,
and, you know, you're like, wait a minute. This is the guy, this is my hero. It really kind of throws into question who we identify with and what we see as heroic, you know?
Well, yeah. And the same goes for Superman. I mean, he's still a good guy per se in this movie, but he's definitely not painted as the all-American hero. It is more God and Messiah savior stuff going on. That great scene when he goes to Mexico and saves that, you know, from the fire, saves that woman. And then he's standing there and everyone's sort of laying their hands on him. Maybe a little heavy handed, but pretty powerful image, you know?
Absolutely. And that sequence I actually rewatched this morning because it's one of my favorites, where it starts with that scene where he's saving the child. And then it's kind of becomes a montage of him saving people, intercut with these like talking heads on TV.
Right.
Like Neil deGrasse Tyson and all these people debating.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
Debating him. And it's so interesting when I rewatched it this time, how on one hand, the scenes where you see Superman in that sequence, he's doing unambiguously good deeds. He's literally saving people left and right in each sequence.
Yeah.
And yet the talking heads are debating about whether he's truly a force for good or, you know, how does this make us feel that we're not the center of the universe anymore and that there's someone who's more powerful and could turn on us at the drop of a hat. And I think that gets to one of the big themes of this movie, which is Superman losing his faith in humanity, whether humanity is even, you know, worth saving. And Man of Steel kind of talked about that too, but that, and again, that's a question that makes people uncomfortable because Superman is supposed to represent the best of what we can be, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's been, I mean, I can't count the Superman movies. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 or 6 maybe before this.
Yeah, at least.
Going back to Christopher Reeve, that really drilled into the notion that he is only good. He is only apple pie and baseball and this Kryptonian, somehow yet all-American kind of a hero in a lot of ways. And this movie never sort of paints him in that light. And that's an awkward experience for a Superman fan, I think.
Yeah, I really like, there's a line in the movie that I think Perry White says, it's Lawrence Fishburne's character, at the Daily Planet, he kind of berates Clark Kent. He says, you know, it's not 1938. Apples don't cost a nickel, Clark.
Yeah.
And I think that gets at a big question of this movie, which is there even a place for Superman in the modern world? Or is the modern world too cynical and mistrusting to have somebody who we hold up as sort of pure goodness? And, you know, you said earlier how compared to Winter Soldier, this movie isn't realistic, so to speak.
Yeah, not as grounded.
Not as grounded. And yeah. I agree with you to a certain extent, but I think the questions it poses are extremely relevant to the real world.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in some ways this is one of the more modern, as far as the themes it explores, modern relevant superhero movies. Another aspect of that is the media and how, like you said, he's doing all these great acts, but the perception has changed. Sure, the destroying Metropolis had a lot to do with it, but it's really the media sort of running away with this new story. And you see it, you know, in all the news clips and the Charlie Rose bits and Neil deGrasse Tyson, right down to the Daily Planet and how they're covering it, and how Perry White just switches sort of in the middle to, you know, I can't remember what headline he barked out, but something about, you know, is this it for Superman? Are we done with him? Something, you know, along those lines. So like the modern portrayal of the media as completely in control of shaping the public consciousness is pretty relevant, I think.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, you know, it's this thing where regardless of what side of the political divide you fall on,
yeah,
I think there's a certain agreement on both sides that that's true, you know, to varying degrees, sure, depending on which side you're on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, you know, this is a 3-hour movie, this Ultimate Edition, but like I said, I think it fared better than the 2.5-hour. Maybe we should talk a little bit about some of the differences. I think most notably the whole Africa subplot is much more robust in this version and makes a lot more sense now than it did in the other version.
Okay, so was it just much more truncated in the original?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't, it's hard for me to remember because I saw it in the theater so long ago, but it's never really, you don't ever fully get what was going on with him going to Africa to save Lois, and that being a setup to make it look like he had laser-eyed all those people. It's not like there's this, I can't remember how, like where they cut, but they left out way too much from the Africa subplot to where it didn't make a lot of sense. And I remember that kind of bugging me at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, I haven't seen the theatrical cut, but I do think that sequence occurs pretty early in the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's right at the very beginning.
And it kind of sets the stage for this ongoing plot thread of manipulation.
Yeah.
Of people being manipulated, mostly by, of course, Lex Luthor, but media manipulation. You know, everyone's being manipulated, and ultimately the manipulation climaxes in the showdown between Batman and Superman. But I think you're right in that Africa subplot. Another interesting aspect of it is this thread that's, you kind of see in the movie pop up from time to time, which is this idea of third world countries or countries predominantly populated by people of color being kind of used as props for the whims of these wealthy white people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's very much in there, I think. And the way the woman who gives the false testimony that she saw Superman destroy the village, and then of course later you learn that she's being basically threatened by Lex Luthor's goons to give this false testimony.
Yeah, and I mean, let's talk about Lex for a second. Mm-hmm. What did you think about Jesse Eisenberg as Lex?
Man, he just goes 110% for broke.
Yeah, he does.
It's so goofy that I do kind of admire it. And I think it's, honestly, I think it's great casting because he's basically playing like this West Coast tech billionaire.
Yeah.
And he's played by the same guy who played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network.
It's hard to ignore those two, that link. Maybe a little shade being thrown there. I don't know, with the casting. I love Jesse Eisenberg a lot as an actor, but him as Lex sort of bugged me a little. The sort of twitchy tech bro bugged me, maybe because I just don't like that kind of person that much in real life. But I didn't love him. Like, I give him credit for really going for it. And I think the idea here is that he's Lex Jr., right?
Yeah. So he's not even the main guy, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, because he references his dad a few times. So that's an interesting spin on it, too, that Lex Jr. is trying to essentially the whole driving force of the film is him sort of orchestrating this battle where, and this is where I just have a few, not problems, but questions. Mm-hmm. What's his end game here? Is he orchestrating this battle? Who does he want dead? Both of them?
It's a good question. I think he, so what threatens him? I think he's threatened by the idea that there's somebody more powerful than him.
Yeah.
And so I think probably he's more afraid of Superman in the end.
Oh, I think so for sure.
And so what he's trying to do by getting Superman to fight Batman and kill him is to show the world that Superman is not all good. Because he keeps saying, right, you know, there's no such thing as power cannot be innocent is what he says.
Yeah, like you can't be all powerful and all good. He says that two or three different times, different versions of that same thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, talking about him being Lex Jr., there's at least one or two lines where he mentions like his dad being abusive.
Yeah.
And so, again, here's another character with daddy issues. But, you know, if as a child he saw this, his dad as this all-powerful person who was very far from good, I'm not saying I sympathize with Lex Luthor, but you can at least understand why somebody would be twisted into thinking that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of dad stuff going on in this movie because you've got, I mean, all three of the male leads have daddy issues, whether it's Bruce never knowing his father, to Clark, and his dad was kind of the opposite. He was almost pure goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lex, you know, had this, I guess, abusive evil villain dad.
Yeah. And so he's, you know, he doesn't trust power basically. And he's somebody who's one of the most powerful people in the world until Superman comes along. And so of course he wants to, he knows he can't defeat Superman by fighting him.
Yeah.
So he has to get the world to distrust Superman and turn against him. I think that's his end
game. And it works. So that's his end game. But what about, and we're, you know, we can jump all around here. The end with the super Zod beast creature.
Doomsday. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it's called?
I think so. Yeah. And I think Doomsday is sorry for any comic people out there who are shaking their heads right now, but Doomsday is like a character from the comics.
Oh, from the comics?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense because at the end during that battle, which was pretty cool, I was like, well, what's his end game here? Like, can he control Doomsday? And like, what happens? Like, let's say Doomsday kills everybody. Then does he just like, you know, say, all right, come on back to your doghouse and get in there. Here's your treat. Like, does he have control? I couldn't figure that part out.
I don't know if it's made explicitly clear, but I think the idea is that he kind of controls him because, you know, he like, he cuts his own hand when he's giving birth to Doomsday. So it's like blood of my blood. So
right,
I think
the
idea is like, he's the father to Doomsday. And so Doomsday will, in theory, listen to his commands. And maybe that's why he keeps going after Superman. Cause Lex is like, kill him. I don't know.
Right. The other cool thing that happens in this movie is you get the setup of the Justice League and some pretty badass Wonder Woman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's teased out at sort of the first third when Diana is at the at Lex Luthor's benefit and steals Bruce Wayne's little, you know, tech device and gets away. And he's like, who is this lady? And then, you know, we get the files of the Flash and Aquaman and who was the other one? The one at Cyborg? No.
Yeah, I don't know his name, but he's some cyborg guy. Bionic
I'm
man.
I'm so sorry. Comic book fans are so mad at us right now. But I mean, come on. Did you see Justice League?
No, I haven't seen Justice League.
Oh, really?
And I, so part of the
reason.
What
is your deal? Why is this your favorite movie?
I'm waiting for the potential of a Snyder cut to come out.
Oh, good Lord.
Which probably
is that what
won't
it
ever happen. But.
You want the 3-hour version?
Yes. But see, so it's interesting because this was actually the one weak part of the movie was all the little teases of Justice League, minus Wonder Woman, because she's actually part of the story of this movie. Like, it felt kind of obvious that, okay, we're going to stop the movie for a second so we can tease out the next movie.
Yeah, I mean, that was clearly going on, but yeah. I forgave it of that because it, you know, it was just, they had to do it. It's sort of like housekeeping.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, this, I mean, this is called Dawn of Justice. So the implication is that these are the events that led to the formation of the Justice League.
Right.
Which is what happens at the end.
Absolutely.
So Batman figures out this whole white Portuguese kryptonite plan. And that's one of the big through lines through this thing is kryptonite. This big chunk of kryptonite is discovered and who has got their hands on it. And he's very much playing Batman, against ultimately what ends up being against his own interests with this whole kryptonite stuff, making these kryptonite weapons to battle Superman. The other thing I didn't quite get was when he created, at one point in the movie, did he create, Super Beast? Was that at, that was as the fight was going on or before?
I think he started to create him because you see him lower Zod's dead body into that goo.
Yeah.
He starts to create him earlier than that. I think maybe as like an insurance policy.
Okay.
In case the Superman-Batman fight doesn't go the way he's hoping.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the fight. It seemed a little anticlimactic to me upon second viewing because it's built up as Batman versus Superman. The whole movie, they're sort of driving toward each other. And then the battle itself is like 10 or 11 minutes long. And it's, you know, it's not like I thought it was terrible. I thought they executed it fairly well. But it had a little bit of an anticlimactic feel for me.
Do you wish it was maybe 10 minutes longer, Chuck?
I don't know about longer, but...
I'm just kidding, yeah.
I don't know. They fight and hit each other a bunch. And at the end, Save Martha is you know, what kind of ends it all. And then they're bros.
So I agree with you. I think... I don't know if the fight is meant to be like satisfying though, you know, cause we know they're probably not going to, one person's not going to kill the other. So there's a sense of like, we're just waiting for something to happen to end this fight.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, the fight in Captain America Civil War. It's good guys fighting good guys.
Yeah.
And we know nobody's really going to die. And so
I think that might be part of it. It's almost like the Matrix, sequels. Once everybody was so powerful, I felt like a lot of those fight sequences didn't have the stakes that they needed.
Right. And I think in this one, though, it's interesting because I think even though that actual physical fight doesn't happen until near the end, there's sort of a battle of ideologies going all throughout the movie. And so when we get to the actual fight, for me at least, it's less about, you know, who's going to win and who's going to get the best punches in and more about like, these two ideologies that are both at their breaking point.
Yeah.
Who's going to give first? And of course, the moment that happens is the Martha sequence, which a lot of people make fun of.
Do they?
Yeah. Like a lot of people say it's cheesy and like, oh my gosh, he changes his whole mind because of hearing that his mom has the same name as his own mom. And I get that. I get that. I get that it's, it's a little cheesy. It's this weirdly like sentimental note in this ultimately grim movie. But I think that moment for me works on less of a literal level and more of a symbolic level, in the sense that Batman, the thing that makes Batman finally change how he feels is that he can finally recognize himself in the other, in this alien.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't bother me too much, actually. I thought that worked well. Because, like, you know, they really established with the upteenth retelling, you know, re-showing of what happened to Bruce's parents at the beginning, you know, getting shot after the theater by Joker, or who ends up being Joker. So it's like, it's really, you really get the sense of his pain, of losing his parents, and that it's sort of that rate that, like, when someone's in a rage and like one word can snap someone out of it, and that word being his mom's name. And then I think Amy Adams rushing in there really helps, because Amy Adams is the best, and she, as an actor, so she really, like, she grounds this movie in a lot of ways, I think, because her acting is so good always. Mm-hmm. And so when she comes in and she's like, that's his mother's name, that's his mother's name. I thought that worked. I liked it.
That's a really good, I really like that interpretation of, or at least how it affected you, in terms of somebody who can be in a blind rage, and then one like trigger word can defuse it. I hadn't really thought of it in that, but I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's almost like the when someone's in a hypnotic trance and there's like the safe word or whatever that snaps them back out.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it worked. So, you know, I don't agree with that criticism.
Me neither.
Let's talk about some of the better action sequences. We get a really sweet Batmobile sequence in this movie. And one of the criticisms of Snyder is that his movies are too dark, literally, lighting-wise, and you can't always see stuff like you want. I did want to see a little bit more of this Batmobile because it looks so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it was a new Batmobile. But I thought that chase sequence was pretty awesome when they're, you know, when he's trying to get the kryptonite.
Yeah, I agree. I think Snyder, yeah, it's a fair criticism of Snyder in general, is that the way he directs action can be a little muddled, perhaps.
Yeah,
I think he does a pretty good job here. And that chase sequence, yeah, that's definitely one of the high points action-wise of the early-ish on in the movie. And also the fact that it kind of ends with Superman just basically being like, no, you can't go any further, Batman, or else I'm going to come hurt you, which I really liked.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we should talk about Batman being immortal, not immortal.
Mm-hmm.
That plays throughout Batman movies. He's a rich guy with a lot of gadgets who has worked out with weights a lot and trained to fight, but he is a dude. And it really comes through in this movie, like the stark difference a few times. One is in the Batman Superman fight. You know, Superman was like, I could have killed you already. Mm-hmm. Like, you realize this. At any point, he could just snap his neck with his fingertips. But he doesn't. And Batman he's got all the tricks, but he's clearly outmatched all throughout this movie, especially there. And then the final big, big battle, you can tell he's sort of like, all right, like, super beings, you know, Wonder Woman, Superman, you're going to need to handle most of this, because I'm just trying to get the fuck out of the way with all my winches and cables pulling me out of the way.
There's a great moment when they're fighting Doomsday, where Doomsday like charges up and is about to blast them with some energy blast. And Superman and Wonder Woman both like just stand their ground, and Batman just dives like under a piece of debris.
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy that has to hide at certain points. You know, there's that one, the Wonder Woman entrance is great because, you know, the Batmobile has crashed and you see Doomsday coming, and he literally says, oh shit.
Yeah.
And he knows he's done for.
Yeah.
And that's where Wonder Woman comes in, and, you know, pretty powerful way to introduce her in a fight scene.
And the her music's cue, that kind of metal guitar sounding, which is kind of cheesy, but works so well.
I like it.
I like it a lot. it's a really... every time that sequence hits, I find it very affecting. Just
totally.
Her entrance. I think it's a great way to introduce her into the movie and ultimately to the universe of the DC universe.
Yeah. When was the 1984 movie supposed to come out? The new Wonder Woman.
This summer, July maybe. And I think I don't know if it's been officially delayed yet or not.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering about that. I was really looking forward to that movie because that first Wonder Woman was just so good. And I think Gal Gadot is it Gadot or Gadot? Is it Gadot?
It's Gadot, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think she's terrific. I think she just kind of owns that character. We get the other subplot going, which is, and it's all, you know, all kind of tied together, but Lex using the guy who lost his legs, I guess he worked for Bruce Wayne, and Bruce Wayne had been sending him this money and he'd been rejecting them, rejecting these checks, and he manipulates him into sacrificing himself. And there's that great moment when Amy Adams sees that fridge full of food.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, he didn't know, you know, he didn't know that he was being used, basically.
Yeah, he's, I think Scoot McNairy is the actor who plays him. He's a really good actor.
Yeah, I like that guy.
it's a really great use of the character. And again, earlier how I talked about sort of people of color being manipulated against Superman and Batman. Also, you could kind of put his character in there who's somebody with a physical disability,
right?
Who's also sort of economically depressed. He loses his legs, he loses his job, he loses his family. He has a lot of anger here.
Yeah.
And so that anger is exploited by this rich billionaire again. It's really fascinating, I think.
Yeah, and you know, he and the whole time, you know, the one thing I do like about Lex in this movie is that in true, like, Lex Luthor was always rich and super smart. Like, that was his superpower, was that he was always one step ahead of everyone with his diabolical schemes. And that still plays out here in that he's always playing one side against the other and manipulation at every single turn, whether it's the media or Scoot McNairy's character or Batman. It's really, like, true to who Lex Luthor as a character has always been.
One small detail I liked that kind of goes into that is how he knows the identities of both Superman and Batman for it seems like most of the movie, and yet we never get a scene where he figures out who they really are. It's just kind of assumed. It's assumed rightly, I think, that somebody with his wealth and resources would have no trouble figuring out who these guys really are. I mean, if you're like the guy who started Facebook, you can probably figure out anybody's identity, you know?
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, the funny age-old criticism of Superman is, you know, Clark Kent puts those glasses on. And
yeah.
It's like, who is that guy?
Yeah, and combs his, or gels his hair, and then he's suddenly...
Yeah, who is that super buff reporter, cub reporter? Yeah, I think Amy Adams, this is some of the best Lois Lane stuff that I've seen in any of the Superman movies. She really is just a likable actor. And I think the most empowered Lois of all the movies, which is a important trait, I think, here.
Yeah, she's great in this. And I think, you know, she really grounds this movie. And she's kind of the only main character who's more or less a regular person.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else are these larger than life mythic gods or super wealthy people, but she's kind of our entry into seeing this world from, quote unquote, the average person's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And she also recognizes at some point, she figures out that she is kind of part of the problem in that she's in love with Clark and Superman. And that is very much a weak point for Superman because, and it's happened in a bunch of the movies, if you want to distract Supes, just put Lois in danger and he'll go leave whatever the fuck he's doing to go help.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole Africa sequence at the beginning is orchestrated because Lex knows that Superman will be there if Lois is in danger, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's also when we get to sort of the climax of, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but of Superman taking on Doomsday and sacrificing himself. You know, so much of this movie is about Superman kind of losing his faith in humanity and humanity losing their faith in somebody like Superman. And right before he goes to fight Doomsday, there's a small moment with Lois where she kind of knows this might be it. They both know this might be it. And he says, this is my world. You are my world. And he kind of, it's in that moment, I think he kind of accepts his role of what he needs to be for humanity, which is unfortunately kind of it's a hero, but also it's like a sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
But he gives himself freely because he loves Lois, and through Lois, it's like loving the world. It's kind of, it's almost like in The Matrix, how in the sequels where it's like Neo choosing between loving one person, Trinity, or loving humanity.
Right.
And how they kind of are the same thing.
Right, but also oftentimes in conflict. You know, he's, and this wasn't just in this movie, like I was saying, in most of the Superman movies, he is faced with the choice of save Lois or save a larger population of people.
Mm-hmm. Or the Spider-Man movies too, with kind of do the same thing with Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy, you know, it's like, how do you be the hero, but also have, close ties to people you care about when those could be exploited?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the classic, superhero conundrum. I guess we don't really get that. Batman's a little bit different. We never really see Batman have a love interest in that way, do we?
Definitely not in this movie. I guess in The Dark Knight, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I forgot about that.
She is. I think it's the same situation where she's being held hostage, and he's got to choose between saving her or saving some people, and she ultimately dies, I think. Yeah, she dies in that. But at least in terms of this movie, no, he kind of doesn't really have any ties to anybody.
Yeah, and that's sort of one of the things with Batman is that he is the Dark Knight. He is, I don't know about if selfish is the right word, but he's not Superman. You never get the idea with Batman, or at least I don't, that he's fighting crime for the good of Gotham. It always feels like he's fighting crime because of this darkness and revenge that exists within him. And a side effect is that he's helping to clean up Gotham.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's again, what makes him it's kind of weird how popular he is in terms of superheroes.
Yeah.
When he has this, I guess maybe it just shows that we kind of like our heroes to be anti-heroes a little bit. But in this movie, it does that to like the nth degree.
Yeah.
So there's a line he says to Alfred in this movie, and I have it written down here. He says, "If we believe there's even a 1% chance that he is our enemy, we have to take it as an absolute certainty."
Yeah.
He says that to Alfred. And I've got another quote here from somebody in the real world that I'm going to read. Do you know what this quote is going to be?
No, but I feel like I should know.
Okay, well, all right. So this is a real world quote. Quote, "If there is a 1% chance that Pakistani scientists are helping Al-Qaeda build or develop a nuclear weapon, we have to treat it as a certainty in terms of our response." And that is Dick Cheney. So Batman literally quotes Dick Cheney in his reasoning for hunting down Superman.
Wow, that's a nice find. I'm sure that was no accident.
No accident, no accident.
Yeah. Interesting. I never picked up on that. So toward the end, you know, you get this great, great sequence where Lois is taken and Mama Kent is taken, Martha Kent. And this is, you know, this is all the setup for Batman to fight Superman. You've got Batman forging these kryptonotic weapons. Is that a word?
It is now.
And, you know, there's always, in all the Superman movies, there's always this great moment, I feel like, where he's about to be able to do away with the bad guy. And they're like, but wait, we have your mom. Or if you do that, then this will happen. You can't kill me because I'm the only one that knows X. And I think they play that really well in this movie after they had kidnapped Martha.
I mean, it's kind of begs the question of how do you, what weakness does somebody with godlike powers have?
Right.
Like, you can't take him down with brute force. How else do you get to him? And it's ultimately, which makes it really interesting, his love for his mother, which is kind of his ties to basic humanity, are his weakness.
Yeah, which is interesting because Superman is an alien, you know, lest we forget. And that's sort of always been the conundrum of Superman, is he is this alien who has come to Earth and experienced human love and emotion.
You know, one thing I have written down in my notes next to Superman being an alien is, in parentheses, I wrote, AKA, he is an immigrant.
Oh.
And I just want, I want to throw that out there.
Okay.
As Superman being the ultimate immigrant story.
Yeah.
Which thus you could say reveals Batman to be maybe something of a bigot, a fearful bigot, fearing what he doesn't understand.
Okay.
I think this is intentional because, you know, when he, that sequence at the Capitol, when Luther blows the building up, when Superman first arrives there, we see these protesters outside.
Yeah.
And they've got the signs that say like Superman equals alien and go back to your planet, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that could be a scene from real life, you know?
Totally.
Totally.
Yeah. And you see kind of both sides there too, in those scenes with the mob crowds. There are the Superman fanatics standing, you know, side by side with the people that are against Superman. And I think that is, I think they do a good job in presenting. It's not very black and white. Eventually the media, and I think especially after the bombing of the Senate hearing or whatever, that's when I think the public perception really takes a turn. But they play it realistically up until that point of he's still going to have his diehard fanatics, but he's also going to, and again, it, like how that mirrors real life and what goes on, not to name check any like current politicians, but there are certain politicians out there today that there's literally nothing they could do that would sway their base to think otherwise.
I mean, it's true. And it's interesting that we're talking about, we're kind of making a comparison between that and Superman in this movie. It's not necessarily a one-to-one comparison, right. But I mean, you know, these questions are, these parallels are intentionally presented in the film, I think. And you know, that scene at the Capitol, for me, I think that scene occurs roughly halfway into the movie, like about an hour and a half through. And to me, like, I think that's a really great sequence. And to me, the whole movie up until that point is building to that sequence. And that scene is kind of like all these plot narrative threads converging at this Capitol Senate hearing or whatever, where it's, will Superman show up? How do we address somebody who has godlike powers in the world?
Yeah.
Should this person have checks on his power? And I think, you know, we haven't really talked about Holly Hunter's character too much yet.
Yeah, she's great and everything always.
And she, 100% agree. And I think she kind of represents the failures of government to, not that she herself is a failure, but the fact that government and democracy doesn't really have a solution to gods walking among us, you know? There's just no way they can deal with it, even though they try and give lip service to the idea of talking to people and hearing ideas.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's I love the way they played the scene out with Lex planting that, you know, granny's peach tea or whatever, which was, I guess, his piss, right?
I think so, yeah.
There's only one way to read that.
Yeah.
And, that moment was really, really pretty great because I hadn't, and in fact, I'd forgotten about a lot of this movie, but I did not put that all together. That he was actually using Scoot McNairy's character with that kryptonite/bomb wheelchair.
Yeah, and there's a really great moment there where the building starts to explode and the room like becomes a fireball, and yeah. yet Superman's kind of at the center of the frame because he's obviously yeah. not hurt by it. And you can see I think he just sort of closes his eyes and he just has this look of pain, like, oh my gosh, all these people around me are dying and I'm fine,
yeah.
but also I might be responsible for this.
Yeah. Like I walked into a trap that I should have seen. And he has that great line with Lois where he says, maybe I wasn't looking for it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That scene on the balcony right afterwards with Lois at her hotel. And there's a really nice exchange there too, where she says, you know, he talks about how Superman was just a farmer's dream. And she says that dream is all some people have. It gives them hope. And then she like touches the insignia on his chest, the S.
Yeah.
And she says, this means something. And he says, it did on my world, but my world doesn't exist anymore. And it's just like the lowest of the low point. That's where he kind of leaves and goes on his vision quest to, you know, the Himalayas or whatever.
Yeah.
But he kind of exactly. decides to abandon humanity, you know?
Yeah. And I think that stuff works. I like him. I think he's been a good Superman. I didn't know a lot about him as an actor before this, but I think he's been a good Supes. Better than the previous guy that did just the one film, Brandon Routh.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cavill has been really pretty solid. He's got the look. He's great as Clark. I think he pulls it off as an actor. So he's one of my favorite Supermen.
Agreed. Yeah, I think he's really good. And you know, like I said, how did you feel about Affleck? How did he?
Yeah,
rank?
I guess I'd sort of dodged that earlier. He wasn't bad. I think it was just there's so much baggage with Ben Affleck as a human that it was hard for me to sort of unwind all that and accept him. But you know, seeing this today, he wasn't bad. He wasn't. I think he's okay. I'm glad to see them moving on. I think it's interesting that he did not get his own, because it was just this in Justice League, right?
Right.
Those are the only two appearances. So there was no standalone Batman film, unless you count this, which I don't really count this as a Batman movie. But he was okay. I'll cop out and just say he was fine. I much preferred Christian Bale. I'm excited about what Pattinson is going to bring, because I think he's a hell of an actor. And I'm really interested. He seems a little small, but I'm interested to see how they bulk him up for this thing.
Yeah, I'm really excited, cautiously excited for Pat. I mean, for the movie, but really excited for Pattinson, because we know he's a great actor. He always does interesting work.
Yeah, totally.
And if nothing else, at least the paycheck he gets from Batman will allow him to be in more like Safdie Brothers movies.
Lighthouses, and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. More indie flicks.
Who is making that one? I know this.
It's Matt Reeves.
Oh, right. Sure. He'll do a good job.
What else did he do?
He did...
Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and Cloverfield.
Cloverfield was his first movie, I think.
Yeah.
That's where he got to start.
And War for the... So two Planet of the Apes movies.
Both good.
Yeah, I like those a lot. Yeah.
And I think Let Me In was a pretty good adaptation of a very, very good foreign film.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Hard to adapt a movie that's pretty great in my opinion, but they did a solid job.
No, I agree. That'll be good. When is that supposed to come out?
Well,
you got
I think
a date?
I can look it up real quick. I know it's been filming has been, put
Delayed
on hold
again. Yeah,
because of coronavirus. October 1st, 2021 is the current date.
Oh, interesting. So it's going to be a while.
Yeah. So a year and a half from now or so.
And that's if it all goes as planned.
Yeah.
Which it's not.
But man, the cast though is stacked. You got Paul Dano, Colin Farrell, John Turturro.
Dano's Riddler, right?
Yes. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, those are quality actors. So they're off to a good start.
And Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I forgot about that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think I wouldn't have minded seeing a standalone Batman with Ben Affleck, just because I don't think it's really fair to not give him one and rate him against other Batman men, because he didn't get his, he didn't get that full sort of shining moment.
Yeah, I mean, if this is his sole outing, well, not his sole outing because of Justice League, but it's certainly not a shining example of Batman in terms of how his character is depicted. But I think that's why I like him, because I think he sells the anger, the angry Batman really well. And also because he's angry, but he's also a billionaire.
Yeah.
Which, for some reason, I feel like maybe this is me reading into Ben Affleck as a person, but I feel like I can buy that, like a rich person who's also angry.
Well, and the drinking and stuff. I mean, there are some parallels with his life in real life and this role that he's taken on. With a, you know, potentially alcoholism as Bruce Wayne, because Jeremy Irons, who was great as Alfred, by the way, I think he was a great choice. Not quite Michael Caine, but a good choice, you know.
Yeah.
No shame in Jeremy Irons at all. And he does a good job as Alfred in this, in that he's always, part of Alfred has always been to be his caretaker. And, he makes a lot out of a little, I think, in this movie, in that way.
Yeah, and he's also kind of Batman's conscience. He's kind of, he's a father figure, and he's part of the Better Angels who are, in this movie, constantly trying to hold, you know, push him back from the ledge, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which he does really well, but it's also interesting how, you know, we talk about Batman's alcoholism in this movie. There are quite a few scenes, at least a couple, where you see Alfred, like, at the control center, but also nursing a scotch.
Oh, right.
And you know, it's never really, there's not never really much read into it, but I think you might be able to assume that Alfred has had his fair share of days where he's got to have a drink after learning what Bruce did that day or something.
For sure. What else you got, dude? What's in your little note stash?
I mean,
I kind of exhausted mine.
We covered a lot of it. I think, here's one. There are a few kind of dream sequences in this. There's one extended one.
That's right.
Which has been, I guess, dubbed the Nightmare, Night with a K, where it's Batman in this desert world.
Yeah.
And it's really like this, like, Mad Max post-apocalyptic world where he's obviously, it's a dream sequence, but he's trying to do some mission. And he gets betrayed by all these guards dressed with Superman insignias on their arms.
Yeah, those waspy flying creatures.
And it's actually kind of terrifying as a sequence, because you see how fearful he is of Superman.
Yeah.
And the fact that these soldiers are kind of dressed almost like these Nazi-esque uniforms.
Yeah.
Like these SS uniforms or something, and then Superman shows up. And especially when these, like, alien bugs show up.
Right.
And maybe I'm reading too much into this, but the way, again, if we see Superman as an alien / immigrant, the way immigrants have been portrayed as less than human in the past and present, especially with the words used like infestation to describe immigrants. And here we literally see like alien bug creatures. Again, I'm reading a lot into this, but I think it's a fair interpretation.
No, I think so too. I mean, if you're gonna go there like you have, you got to go all the way. With the political intrigue. The other interesting thing is you see Superman really angry a few times in this movie, which is a bit of a change of pace. Supes is generally pretty level. And you see some real rage come out a couple of times, and I think it really works for this film.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, it's probably one of those reasons why people didn't necessarily respond to this movie very strongly, but we don't like to see our heroes falter.
Right.
Or lose their mojo, their will to do what they do. And I think, to me, that's why this movie... why I find this movie so interesting is because it seems to reckon with the idea of superheroes in a world that looks like our real world.
Right.
You know? And the answers aren't satisfying. The answers are kind of depressing. Like, this is a very despondent, depressing movie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the knocks on Snyder's world and the DC world is literal darkness in the way he shoots things and figurative darkness, whereas Marvel movies are color and light, a lot of daytime stuff. Snyder has got a lot of nighttime, rainy night stuff in all his movies, that sort of gray look on the color wheel. But, you know, the guy has an aesthetic, and he has stuck to it.
Man, and that's why I got to respect it, too, because, again, like I said at the top, like, this feels like his movie. Like, this feels like the movie he wanted to make. Whether or not you like it or not, that's you know, another question, but it didn't feel like somebody was, like, a corporate boardroom, for the most part, was mandating, it has to look like this, you have to outsource your action sequences to this committee, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. It's his movie 100%, and he's not, I mean, this isn't light fare. He is going for something pretty weighty for a superhero movie. The themes and the tones. And I think Marvel does that pretty successfully as well, despite the brighter overall feel. A lot more laughs in Marvel movies, infinitely more laughs.
It is funny when this movie, like, three times maybe tries to give you a few, like, Marvel-esque jokes.
Very few times.
Very few times. I kind of just, like, shake my head. I'm like, ah, they're trying, but, you know, I appreciate the effort, but this is not your strong suit.
Yeah, and, you know, I ultimately obviously love the Marvel films a lot more, but I credit them for not just trying to ape what Marvel has done and for having their own vision and just being like, you know what, we're not going to try and do what they're doing. We're going to do our own thing. It's going to be a lot darker and a lot heavier, and if people like it, they like it, and if they don't, they don't.
Yeah, and so I can... you know, I'm sure when people listen to this episode, there's going to be a lot of debate whether or not we're off our rocker. A lot of people hated this movie, and, you know, that's fair. But I feel like whether or not, even if you hate this movie, I think you at least got to respect that they did something different and went with a vision, however flawed that vision might have been.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious what's going on in the DC world next. I haven't really followed. I did see the Aquaman movie, which was okay. Not terrible.
I saw it.
Did
on
you
a,
like it?
Yeah, I saw it on a plane. Kind of felt the same way.
Yeah.
It was fine.
It was all right. He was a little too surf bro for me.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
But it wasn't bad. Do you know what's in store? I mean, obviously the Wonder Woman stuff is the best of DC.
Yeah, Wonder Woman 1984 would be next. And then I guess the Pattinson Batman.
Oh, right. Yeah, that counts.
I don't know if there are any other sequels on the way. I'd have to check.
Yeah, like a Justice League sequel, or if I don't know what Snyder's deal is either, if he's now...
He might be done.
Leaving it. Is he done?
I think maybe so. But, you know, it's... I think part of that too is that maybe they were planning for way more of an expanded universe, but some of these movies didn't perform that well,
right,
at the box office. So I think they might have canned some of them. It's funny. I have this movie on Blu-ray actually, the Ultimate Edition, and the cover, the box cover, is Batman and Superman, and then in the middle is Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
and she's like given prominent the top billing in terms of the picture, even though she's in this movie for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's because Gal Gadot is gorgeous, and put her on a movie poster and that doesn't hurt.
And the fact that Wonder Woman is one of their it did so well. It's one of their success stories, you know.
Yeah. I had to buy this too because the Ultimate Edition was not rentable on iTunes. So I now own this thanks to you.
Man, that warms my heart. I appreciate that.
paid $10. That's fine. I do recommend that people watch the Ultimate Edition. It was definitely a richer film than... The two and a half hour version is sometimes when you see the big 3 hour director's cut, it feels bloated. And while it was certainly long, it made more sense for this movie to be 3 hours long than 2.5.
Yeah.
I will say that.
And just kind of one of the final thoughts I had on this movie, looking at my notes here, is the ending, right? After Superman sacrifices himself and we see the funerals, two funerals that are cross-cut with each other. And at the funeral in Kansas, Gal Gadot has this really kind of haunting line where she says, "They don't know how to honor him except as a soldier."
Yeah.
And that's
a great line.
It's a great line. It's kind of ambiguous. I guess what it's getting at is like, we only embrace Superman now that he's dead and has saved everyone. He's given himself freely to us. And maybe this idea that we only can, especially America, can only think of bravery and heroism in terms of like war and combat. Mm-hmm. And that's what we hold up as like the highest ideal of goodness, is the ability to fight, which is kind of a sad truth.
Yeah, the ability to fight, and you know, there's a large part of this country that sacrificing your life for the freedom of others is the ultimate martyrdom.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm not knocking the idea of that at all.
Sure.
But I think in terms of like our culture, this idea of that the only show of strength is through fighting and violence, I guess.
Right, right.
This sort of classically traditional masculine ideal, which I think the movie acknowledges as being kind of messed up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is no superhero called the mediator, you know?
Not yet. I think we just birthed that idea here, Chuck.
What do? They just talk things out in a reasonable manner. But they wear a cape while they do it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
All right, dude. Well, I enjoyed this conversation. It's good seeing you.
Yeah, you too, man. And thanks for, like I said, thanks for indulging me on this. I'm glad you found some good stuff in it too.
Yeah, I did. I liked it much more this time around.
Yeah, and I think, like I said at the top, it's just such an interesting movie to dig into. Even if you don't like it, it's just playing with so many themes here. Like, let me put it this way. Like, if I was still in college, this would be a movie I could write like a 10-page essay on for one of my film studies classes, you know, just because it's so dense with interpretation.
Yeah, the old film studies paper.
Oh, boy. I don't miss those, though.
What is Casey? Has Casey seen this?
No, I've told him about it, though. He does want to watch it at some point, just because I've told him about how it's much more interesting than you might expect going in.
So he'll his take.
He'll watch it at some point, I think.
Well, all right, brother. We will get a roundtable going soon. I know we want to talk about Last Jedi.
Yeah, I've been hounding you about that.
Yeah, and I think I'd promised that to other people as well. So maybe we'll get like you and Holly and maybe one other, maybe Annie or somebody, and we'll see if we can get a little Skype Zoom or something with all of us in the virtual room together.
Well, that sounds fun, man. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, you take care of yourself, and thanks to everyone for listening. Check out the Ultimate Edition of Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Edition. It's 3 hours, but what else you got to do, right? All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.